Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, creating finished basements for family fun, fitness, and entertaining. Ideas at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Danny Wisentowski. For almost two centuries, beer has shaped St. Louis. And while breweries like Anheuser-Busch are still flowing today, if you pore over our city's history, you'll find multiple beer dynasties started by families of German immigrants. And if you go far back enough, you'll arrive at the story of Adam Lemp, who in 1840 opened his Western brewery and started selling lager. And today, about 180 years later, the Lemp name is still associated with beer and the way that Adam Lemp used a cave system to store and enjoy that beer. But the Lemp family has another legacy, one which Adam Lemp could never have imagined when he began brewing that beer here so many years ago. Tragedies, betrayals, and suicides, a supposedly haunted mansion, and theories still swirling to this day of cover-ups and possible murder. What is clear is that many of the Lemp family had problems, despite their wealth, and likely because of it. But there is so much more to the Lemp family than tragedy. A new book has uncovered records that give us a better picture of what it took to build that beer dynasty and provides new hints of the dysfunction behind the scenes. The book is called Adam Lemp and the Western Brewery, and I'm joined now by its author, historian, and researcher, Chris Nafziger. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Chris, this book, as you write, was kind of inspired by a question that you weren't prepared to run into, and it came to you while you were looking at the burial records of Adam Lemp, the patriarch of the Lemp family. You found over a dozen people near his mausoleum, none of them with the last name Lemp, and you asked yourself, who are all of these people? So why was that question so striking to you, and why did it lead you on the journey to write this book?
Well, yeah, basically, I was looking at the burial records for Bellefontaine Cemetery, and I saw Adam Lemp was buried there, and there was his wife was buried there as well, so they both had the last name Lemp. But then there's all these other people that had different last names, and, you know, you go around to other records and, you know, Bellefontaine Cemetery, and it's usually most people have the same last name. So what's going on here? Where did all these people come from? I mean, was he just being nice and letting his friends be buried in there? But I started digging deeper, and I started discovering that Adam Lemp had been married twice before. He had three marriages. And it turns out that his third wife had been married twice before as well. And then I start realizing this tangled web of all these earlier stepchildren, step-grandchildren, marriages that he tried to hide from his children that he had with later marriages. And I just started finding that this was a very complicated story. You know, we know about William Lemp Sr., you know, the huge brewery down on South Broadway. But then I started realizing that, wait a minute, this Adam Lemp, which we didn't know much about 10 years ago, had a really complex and very fascinating and in many ways kind of very tragic life.
And you really try to get a sense of who this man was. And this is not easy. This is 1840. This is a long time ago, even though there are a lot of newspapers and records. But you don't start in St. Louis. You actually try to go to Germany and to figure out where he was born, how did he come to America, what was happening in this early part of his life. And you find a wife and you find a child that he abandoned, as well as these debts. What picture came up as you examined Adam Lemp's life in Germany that he left behind?
Yeah, so scholarship in the 21st century has become much more digital and electronic. So I actually did all this research from St. Louis in contacting German scholars. And of course, Germany is a very literate country. And they had actually many different scholars in Germany had already been doing some research. And I contacted, there was actually a scholar who actually works for the city government of a small town called Eschwege in the German province of Hessen. And I actually reached out to him, and he provided all these original documents in the archives of this small town. Likewise, the Lutheran Church of this German province of Hessen actually has really good records. And I was actually able to get a hold of actual baptismal records. But also, very interestingly enough, there had been an earlier book written about the ancestry of Adam Lemp. And when I went to corroborate these records, it turned out from these church leaders that they actually didn't exist.
Wow.
So it's actually very interesting. And like I said, I could do this anytime. I actually did this late at night at the time. I was a night owl at this point in my life. And so I could just send off these emails to these, you know, German pastors in Hessen, and they could get back to me and say, no, actually, this person who told you that Adam Wimp was baptized in our church was not actually telling you the truth. So it was really fascinating and, you know, basically learning about this man, Adam Wimp, who was basically running breweries into the ground and going bankrupt in Germany. It was this story of, you know, it was really shocking because, you know, the story of the Lemps in America in the 1800s was one of success, you know, millionaires.
Did you find out why he left Germany? Was he seeking opportunity or was he running away from something?
He was running away from debts. And that's something that I learned from this German scholar. He actually went to the archives and there's actually a notation on some documents about how he basically abandoned his wife and William Lemp Sr. In 1836, and we know this from these documents. And then when he gets to America, there are some sort of these vague references of living in Cincinnati. And then he comes to St. Louis probably around 1838.
And, you know, that the year 1840 comes up a lot in your book as it is sort of this purported date of when he opens the Western Brewery. That is not as clear as it might seem either.
No, it's not. I think that's what the Lemps say it was. The earliest date that we can prove that he was actually brewing beer was 1841. That's when there's actual documentation. Now, the Lemps like to play fast and loose with history. You know, you hear the word historical revisionism. It gets thrown a lot in politics. But the Lemps were the original historical revisionists. They lied about who owned the brewery at one point. They lied about Adam Lemps' story about how he came to America. They basically just, you know, papered over the fact that he abandoned his family for starters. He said that he actually brought his son William with him to America originally, which is not true. They like to lie a lot.
Tell me a bit about, you know, this, you know, when he does land in St. Louis, in whatever year it might have been. Your book goes into a bit of what German brewery culture was, but this was also a bit in conflict with the culture of St. Louis, the non-German immigrants. One of the most fascinating parts of this is that Adam Lemp is continually sued and indicted for serving whiskey and alcohol on Sunday, and he just pays the fine and continues this conduct. What stands out about, you know, what St. Louis looked like and this brewing culture that Adam Lemp just becomes the king over, it seems like, in a relatively short amount of time?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's interesting. You know, there's a huge debate about immigration in America right now. I mean, it's that one of the biggest questions in America right now is that immigration. But what people don't realize is that back in the 1840s, Germans were seen as these invaders, these people that were un-American, and there are people that were, you know, being questioned about their loyalties. And one of the big things that native-born Americans really pointed to was the fact that they drank on Sundays. And there was actually a law in St. Louis that you could not serve alcohol on Sundays, and Adam Lemp and many of his fellow businessmen in St. Louis just openly sold alcohol and he got arrested for it. And the fine was $5, which was actually a lot of money back then. That was basically a skilled laborer's weekly pay. And Adam didn't seem to care at all. He was arrested constantly for it. He'd pay the $5 fine and just continue on selling. And that created a lot of that tension in, you know, the St. Louis society, that basically these Germans came in and ignored what were seen as proper societal norms in St. Louis at the time.
Right. But those breweries were very popular. They had people packed into the saloons, into the cave system. I do want to return to a note here that, you know, we kind of started with the fact that you were initially pulled into this story by kind of this mysterious presence of many people without a Lemp last name at the Lemp burial. And there's just this incredible anecdote you bring up in the book, and it speaks to how much bad blood was within this family, how much they had retained this interior conflict. And you mention some of it goes back to Adam Lemp's abandonment of his family in Germany. But you mentioned the fact that Adam Lemp's son, William, was so angry over that abandonment. William built a new mausoleum in Bellefontaine Cemetery, but only for his wife's parents. And then William's son, continued this feud, and you found this incredible letter from 1909. William Jr. writes to the cemetery. He is a millionaire, by the way, at this point. He writes that he doesn't want to pay the annual fee to maintain Adam Lemp's grave, a savings of about $5.95. You include this anecdote in this book, and this just seems like the most petty thing a millionaire could do. What does this signify to you about the state of the Lemp family?
Yeah, that, you know, like I mentioned that, you know, Adam Lemp was married three times. And so William Lemp is from the second marriage. And so, of course, she would be the grandmother of all the famous children that you hear all the stories about. And it really points to that, you know, this was not a happy family where everybody got along. And I think it's very telling that when it came time for the mausoleum to be built and, you know, the Fikert, Jacob and Elizabeth Fikert, they were moved to the mausoleum, but, you know, William Lemp Jr., Billy Lemp, he's who married the Lavender Lady, you know, Lillian Handlin, they weren't willing to, first of all, move their own grandparent, their own grandfather. They left him behind. They had no love for them. And likewise, they weren't willing to pay $6 to mow the lawn. Now, you know, nowadays, you know, Bellefonte Cemetery just mows the lawn for everybody. You don't have to pay $6 a year. But I think that really points to the fact that there was bad blood, you know, that was like 60 years later.
Yeah. And the fact that it held on and getting a dollar amount, you know, how much value did they get out after saying, you know, screw you to that side of
right,
the family?
Exactly.
But we're going to continue this conversation, but we need to take a quick break first. We'll be back shortly to continue this talk about the Lemp family and why some local historians are working to show people that there is so much more to the Lemps than just tragedy. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Danny Wisentowski, in for Elaine Cha. We're talking today about the legacy of the Lemp family in St. Louis. It's a story that started with Adam Lemp, a German immigrant, opening a brewery on Cherokee Street around 1840. And with me to talk about Adam Lemp, we have historian Chris Nafziger. We've been talking with him today about a book he wrote about Adam Lemp, but I'd also like to introduce another voice to this conversation, Amanda Clark. She is a public historian and CSTL Tours Manager at the Missouri Historical Society. Amanda, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Amanda, we've been talking about the Lemp family, and part of what fascinated me with this is that there is an audience that is interested in the Lemp family as an example of true crime, as even a supernatural investigation, as even possible ghost hauntings. And I confess, when I first looked at this story and I was talking with Chris and bringing you both in, I thought, oh, let's continue to the ghost story. Let's tell why there is this supernatural element. But I talked with you and you said, actually, you have a totally different approach to this, and I appreciated it so much. And so you actually intentionally, you do not see this as a spooky ghost story or a true crime mystery. Well, why is that?
So, yeah, this is one of my favorite parts of my job that I get to do, right? People come to me with a lot of questions that we get the same questions over and over again. This is one of them. And it's a chance, though, to get people to either look at more history or to kind of shift that perspective, just like you did, right? So people come to me with this and I have them, let's look at the family. Like, why are we fascinated in this? Why do we need them to be ghosts? And why do we need that piece? Why can't it not be just a story exploring mental health issues and the challenges that people face, no matter how much money they have? We all have. It's a human story. It's a human modern story.
Why do you think people are so attached to this? There is this kind of sickly, you know, almost a attraction to the tragedies of the rich. You know, they are distant, perhaps, from people who do not have millions of dollars. Their pain might not feel as raw or real. Is there something there? Or why do people tell you that they're wondering about, is the Lemp Mansion haunted? Is there a ghost there? Why do they interest that?
Because they're people, they're human, right? And that is a deep human thing. Like, true crime is not something we invented as a genre that people are interested in. It's not even remotely modern. And people, that first true crime kind of emerges as a genre in Europe in, you know, 16th, 17th century, when the only thing standing between everyday people working, they're, you know, working really hard on the farms, and the elite. That's the only crime. Like, they do get interested in crimes because there's no one between the elite and God, right? Like, the crimes are, that's what they're fascinated in. Then the Victorians bring in science and forensics, and we get more into these stories. And the Limp family story for us here in St. Louis is that story for it brings all those things together.
And Chris, you know, your book, it includes some of these details on some of the earlier tragedies the Limps were around. They, you know, this was not just suicides that affected them. Adam Limp and others, you know, lost people who were very close to them. You do not go down the rabbit hole of hauntings or supernatural elements. Why did you take that approach for your own book?
Well, you know, I think that's a great question. You know, I respect everybody's beliefs, but for me personally, you know, ghosts and spirits and stuff like that are not something that really is of interest to me. You know, I was given the opportunity by the owner of the Limp Brewery, along with my friend Jason Gray, an amazing photographer, to basically explore all of the cellars and every nook and cranny of the cave and where all the beer used to be stored. And no spirits ever came and said hello. And I even joked with Jason. I'm like, you know, here's the opportunity. This is when Adam or William Sr. can contact us and give us a sign. And if their spirits are down there, they chose not to give me any reason to, you know, believe in their spirits being down there. And so I just, it's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah. And beyond the supernatural, there's also, I think, the temptation to see suicides or deaths as, you know, possible connected murders or a conspiracy. Amanda, I understand that you actually had a difficult moment as a historian, as someone who cares about this city and these details. You were involved in a documentary project and you were basically put in a situation where you were asked to maybe this was a murder. Maybe we don't really know. And that put, you know, it didn't sound like that was a positive experience for you. How did you handle that? And what did you learn from that pressure?
Yeah, this was 2019 or so. I think Chris and I were both involved in this. We were talking about it earlier. It was something, a project another group had had for a long time. And I had always stayed away from the Limp story, kept my distance, was, you know, didn't really find much connection with it. And also there's people that do the history really well. And they had wanted me to talk for Elsa. Elsa is the daughter of one of the later generations. She does commit suicide in her, not in the mansion, but in her home in the Central West End. And that's the story they think might be murder, right? So they bring me all this research and like, can you be the voice for Elsa? And I said, sure, I'll take this on because I didn't know much about it. And I really got into her story. And the deeper I got, it was such a personal human story of a woman that, you know, had all the money in the world, had all this stuff, but did not have a healthy marriage. And it was also a story of a couple that had all the resources in the world, but no marriage counseling. And there was also, you know, obviously mental health issues in both families and challenges that in the end, you know, that one of the things they hang on for the murder is that, you know, her husband finds that she has, you know, finds her in the bed, she shot herself. And then there's this amount of time where he calls the lawyer first before the police. And that's one of the things that this team was like hanging on to, like that's the smoking gun, other than a smoking gun. And and I was like, well, I don't know. I'm not obviously not super wealthy, but if I was, I'd probably call my lawyer first. If something like that happened in my house, that's just the life of the wealthy people. They call the lawyer first. Like to me, there was things that were very easily explained.
And that sounds so familiar to the way that I think even true crime now, or the way that, you know, why didn't you act quickly enough? Why did you do this and not that? Who did you inform? A lot of these can sometimes be good questions, but a lot of times they create doubt that could even point a suspicion at a victim. And, you know, the fact that we don't know everything, that there are these gaps. Chris, this comes up actually in another case that I was really fascinated in the way that you presented. Finding this man named William Kuechel,
yes,
who, this is back to Adam Limp. This is before, I think, the supposed, you know, the suicides, of course. But you found one of these people who had a great influence seemingly, but you had a bunch of gaps in this knowledge and you pursued this to figure out who he was and why he died. Tell me a bit about where that investigation led you and the gaps that you are still wrestling with.
Yeah. So this is actually my favorite chapter in the book. Interestingly enough, is this early business partner of Adam Limp, almost completely forgotten, this, I would describe this troubled figure. And I basically brought this guy back from being completely anonymous. He was in early business contracts. He actually married one of Adam Limp's stepdaughters. It's kind of actually sort of this business transaction almost, to be honest. And then he leaves and he kind of goes into these just series of failed business ventures. And I had his probate file and I figured out that he died. And I couldn't figure out when or why. And then I started digging around in the old death record books at the Recorder of Deeds, and I found it. And normally in this book, it lists the causes of death. But then for him, it just says his body found in the commons. And I'm like, that's not a cause of death, guys. And then I found some German newspaper articles, and I found it by searching for the German word for dead body. And it took me like a half an hour to go through all of these just terrible stories of dead bodies being found. And I finally found the newspaper article about his death. And it is a tragic story. And I think that's, you know, I guess I went from the approach of what I want my family talked about the way that some people, not all, talk about the Lemps, you know, and we don't know why he died. They just found his body lying out near actually where modern-day Benton Park is, near English Cave. And I kind of tried to approach this book like not to sensationalize it. Like I wouldn't want my family to be talked about in this way. And I tried to be sensitive. Why did he, you know, he had all these debts. Did someone ambush him out near the intersection of Jefferson and Arsenal because they were angry that he cost them a lot of money? Did he take his own life because of all of the business problems he was having? We don't know.
There are so many questions, but you find so much humanity, even in the business records and the people, and it is just a remarkable work that you've done. Chris Nafziger is a historian, researcher, and author. His book, which came out earlier this summer, is titled Adam Lemp and the Western Brewery. Chris, thank you so much for being
here.
Thank you. And Amanda Clark is a public historian and CSTL Tours manager at Missouri Historical Society. Amanda, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.